34. Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The Son remains forever. So if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you are offspring of Abraham, yet you seek to kill me because of my words find no place in you. I speak of what I have seen with my father, and you do what you have heard from your father." They answered him, "Abraham is our father." Jesus said to them, "If you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You are doing the works your father did." They said to him, "We were not born of sexual immorality. We have one father, even God." And Jesus said to them, "If God were your father, you would love me, for I came from God and I am here. I came not of my own accord, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I say? It is because you cannot bear to hear my word. You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Which one of you convicts me of sin? If I tell the truth, why do you not believe me? Whoever is of God's hears the words of God. The reason why you do not hear them is that you are not of God."
Well, good morning, everyone, and lovely to see you here this morning. And this is our fourth talk in John chapter 8. And by now, you would agree with what I said at the beginning. Isn't it a deep and amazing chapter, isn't it? There's so much going on in here. So let's ask God. We have prayed, but let's ask him again. Father, please come teach us what's going on here. So let's pray. Father, please teach us. This is an extraordinary conversation going on here between Jesus and those who oppose him. And we get to hear what's going on. Please help us to understand. Lord, open brains now. Open minds and hearts. Please be with us now, sweet Spirit, and teach us your word. Amen. So what's the greatest love story you've ever heard? What's the greatest love story you've ever heard? Now, if you're a guy, I want you to stop thinking of when the Eagles won the premiership, okay? I'm not talking about sport, okay? And if you're a lady, please tell me you're not thinking of Sleepless in Seattle or what's the black and white thingy, Colorless in Casablanca. Or tell me you're not thinking of that. I want you to go a bit deeper. What is the greatest love story you've ever heard? Well, think deeper. How about this? I've got the second greatest love story ever heard. And tell you what I'll do. I'll put it up here and see if you can guess where this comes from. Who got to spend their childhood in a library? So here it goes. Two households, both alike in dignity. From ancient grudge break to new mutiny, from civil blood make civil hands unclean, from forth the fatal loins of these two foes, a pair of star-crossed lovers, there's a clue, take their life, do with their death, bury their parents' strife, the fearful passage of their death-marked love, and the continuance of their parents' rage, which but their children's end, naught could remove. Who's that? Who knows? Come on, be honest. Yay! You know, Jane. Okay, me and Jane know where it comes from. All right, that's Romeo and Juliet. And that's the prologue to arguably the second greatest love story ever told. Now, I know some of you didn't keep that up there for a moment there, guys. I know some of you didn't get that. And I know if you're like Danny, you didn't even know that's English. Danny, that's English. Okay? But let me translate it for you. Just look at this. Two households, both alike in dignity. So dignity means power, strength. There are two houses. There are two households, two dynasties, and they're equal in power and strength. But there's an ancient grudge breaks to new mutiny. These two households are at war. There's this ancient war between them. And in the story, this is the prologue, you're going to see that they break again into new violence. From civil blood, make civil hands clean. It's going to lead to bloodshed. It's going to be ugly, very ugly. But out of these two houses, two children are born, a pair of star-crossed lovers. And here's the amazing thing, and this is where it gets pointy. Do with their death, bury their parents' strife. What's going on here is that, well, this is what Romeo and Juliet's about, is that love wins the day. What happens is these two lovers, their love and their death causes peace. If you see the last three lines, their fearful passage of death marked love and the continuance of their parents' rage, you can see I'm in the mood. There's a lot of desks next door. Exams are coming up. So I'm in the, you know, which but their children's end naught could remove. Here's what it is. The only thing that could end the hostility between this ancient feud, between these two houses, is the death of children born in the house. And love wins the day. You know what we learn from Romeo and Juliet? Peace comes through love. And love is stronger than death. Because they die, they commit suicide. And yet, their love is so strong, it conquers death and brings about peace in the two houses. It is the second greatest love story ever told. Well, I think so anyway. So then what's the greatest love story? If that's the second greatest love story, what is the greatest love story? Now you have to bear with me. Our church printer stopped working and this thing has also stopped working. So I'm going to go there. There, it's working again. Now, what is the greatest love story ever told? It's the true story of God and his people. That is the greatest love story ever told. And do you know why? Why is it the greatest? Because it's true. Romeo and Juliet is not true. God and his love for his people is true. But it's not just because it's true. It's because every other story is modeled on God's story. The true story of God's love for his people. Our passage this morning is going to show us this. The truth is that there are two houses. The truth is there are two houses and that they are at war with each other. And it's not Montague and Capulet as in Romeo and Juliet. It's a division that divides the entire planet. Our whole planet is divided into these two houses and they're at war with each other. And this ancient feud began a very long time ago. Have a look at this passage in the Bible, right in the beginning, Genesis chapter 3. God said this, I will put enmity between you. This thing keeps going off. I'm going to keep trying here. Let's see if I don't go to that side, maybe it'll work. Very frustrating. This is what God said, I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your offspring and her offspring. He will bruise your head and you will bruise his heel. Here's what God says. These are the two houses. There is the house of the woman and her offspring. And there is the house of, well, he's talking about the serpent, Satan, the devil. And what he's saying is these two houses are going to be at war. I will put enmity between them. There's going to be a war that's going to characterize this planet. But God makes an incredible promise. He says, one day a child will be born, look at it, in the house of the woman, don't go forward yet, in the house of the woman, and she is the one, just go back there, yep, and she is the child born in the house of the woman will bring the war to an end. But throughout the Bible, what God does is he shows us that this promise is repeated in greater detail, but the house is narrowed down. It's not just born of the woman. The promise gets narrowed down until it becomes, look at this, the house of a man called Abraham. Now the Lord said to Abraham, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land I will show you. God comes to one man on the whole planet. And he says to him, I will bless you. I'll make you a great nation. I'll make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I'll bless those who bless you. Him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. So what God says is that the promise gets narrowed down. First it was just a woman. Now it's Abraham. And it gets narrowed down even further because Abraham has two sons. Listen to this. Abraham has two sons. One is Ishmael. One is Isaac. And it turns out, you think, they're both in the house because they're both Abraham's children. But guess what? God says, kick the son of the slave woman out the house. God kicks Ishmael out. And God says, no, Isaac, it's narrowing down to Isaac. And that's what Jesus referred to last week. Look in our passage in verse 34. Jesus says to them, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. We looked at this last week. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The son remains forever. What's Jesus talking about? He's talking about when Ishmael got kicked out. The slave doesn't stay forever. The son, Isaac, stays forever. That's why he says later on, but if the son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. Jesus is giving the strongest warning to the Jewish people. They're saying to them, look in our passage, verse 39, Abraham is our father. And Jesus is giving them the strongest warning. What he's saying to them is, don't you remember? Ishmael was also Abraham's son. Ishmael could have said what you said, Abraham's my dad. But Ishmael got kicked out. What Jesus is doing here is giving the strongest warning to the Jews. He's saying to them, don't presume. Double check that you're in God's house because it's narrowed down. Not Ishmael, it's Isaac. And then it gets narrowed down even further because Abraham has Ishmael, Isaac. Isaac has two sons, Esau and Jacob. Both of them are Isaac's children. And what happens? God says, no, I choose Jacob and I don't choose Esau. It gets narrowed down again. Jacob goes away. He has 12 sons. Their name gets changed to Israel. And God says, this is my son. Have a look at this passage here. Look what God says. Then you shall say to Pharaoh, thus says the Lord, Israel is my firstborn son, not Esau's children. Jacob's children, Israel. And God says, Israel is my firstborn son. And I say to you, let my son go that he may serve me. If you refuse to let him go, behold, I will kill your firstborn son. Can you hear God's jealousy for his people? God wants to set his people free. It's been narrowed down to these 12 tribes and these 12 sons of Jacob called Israel. But it gets narrowed down even more. And it comes to one man, David. And God says it's to David. And David, your son, Solomon, will be my son. It gets narrowed down. Now, I'm not going to talk about that this morning. You'll have to come over Christmas. Because over Christmas, we'll look at that. But ultimately, God's household gets narrowed down to one individual. One man. His name is Jesus. He is God's son. Have a look at what he says in verse 34. Jesus answered them, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. Just like Ishmael, the slave does not remain in the house forever. The son remains forever. Now, watch what he says. So if the son, it's come down to one individual, sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you're offspring of Abraham. I know this. But you seek to kill me because my word finds no place in you. Now look what Jesus says. I speak of what I've seen with my father. You do what you've heard from your father. Jesus is saying, I am the true son. I've come to set God's people free. And just like Romeo and Juliet, I've come to do it by my death. My death will end the hostility between the house of your father and the house of my father. My death will end the war and produce reconciliation. And in our passage, Jesus is going to teach us about these warring houses. Here are the three things we're going to learn this morning, and then I'm going to do a very risky thing. I'm going to put this aside and just speak without notes, because this thing keeps jamming and it's irritating me more than I can say. But here are the three things I'm going to say this morning from this passage. Number one, Jesus is going to teach us about the two houses. Verse 38, I speak of what I've seen with my father. You do what you've heard from your father. First thing he's going to show us is, what are these two houses? Who are the two fathers? Are you serious? Are you going to tell us this morning that I'm in one of only two houses? That's a heavy thing to say. Second thing he's going to show us is, why are they fighting? Why are these two houses fighting? And the third thing, and the most important thing this morning, friends, and I'm going to beg you, will you listen to him and double check which house you're in? Which house are you in? The Jews presumed. Do you presume? It's a sober warning to us this morning. But lastly, Dwayne, I thought this was a love story. You start off Romeo and Juliet. Where's the love? It's got heavy very quickly. The love is this, that Jesus Christ, like Romeo, is the heir of the one house. He has the right to take us from the one house and place us in to the other house. What you're going to see this morning is, at great cost to himself, he's able to wean us from one house and put us in the other house. In fact, poor old Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo? Romeo couldn't make Juliet a Montague. She stayed a Capulet, and they both died. Jesus is not like that. What we're going to find in the greatest love story ever told is that Jesus Christ died in order to make Juliet a Montague. His bride was captured. His bride is in the house of slavery. His bride has no will. She's a victim. She's trapped. And Jesus comes, and at his great death and cost to himself, he rescues his bride and brings her into his father's house. It's the greatest love story. And how does the Bible end? Better than Romeo and Juliet. How does Romeo and Juliet end? With a suicide. I mean, what's wrong with William Shakespeare? Today he'd be on medication. How does the Bible end? The Bible ends with a wedding. The Bible ends with everyone lives happily ever after. It's the greatest love story ever told, because Jesus wins his bride. If you didn't get any of that, that is the background to our story this morning. Let's look at it together. Just 2 points. Have a look at this. Only those who love Jesus have God as their father. Only those who love Jesus have God as, in other words, only those who love Jesus are in the house of God. There are only two houses. There are only two tribes. There are only two races on earth. There are only two households. Look at what Jesus says in verse 39. Look carefully at what he says. Jesus said to them, if you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works of Abraham, but you now seek to kill me. A man has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You are doing the works your father did. There are very clearly two houses. Now, look what the Jews say. Verse 39. Abraham is our father. Abraham is our father. Jesus says to them, no. He's not your father. He is not your father. You are doing what your real father wants you to do. Now, friends, I can't think of anything more jarring in our culture than what Jesus is doing here. Listen to me. Isn't it true in our culture today that if you self-identify, that's the end of the story? If I self-identify as a male, you must accept it. If I self-identify as a female, you must accept it. If I self-identify as an Apache helicopter, you must accept it. In fact, no. You must build a toilet that suits me. Because whatever I self-identify it, that's the end of the story. My right is to self-identify. The Jewish people come to Jesus and they self-identify as Jews. And they self-identify as descendants of Abraham. And you know what Jesus does? He says, no, you're wrong. Jesus says, no, you're wrong. You are not Abraham's descendants. And you are not true Jews. Now you just got to think how offensive that is. That is just so offensive. What right has Jesus got to override someone else's self-identification? What right has Jesus got to say, you're wrong? I will tell you who you are. What right has Jesus got to do that? It makes you wonder. In fact, it makes you think. Surely only the Creator can identify what He's made. The creature. My hammer cannot tell me it's a screwdriver because I don't accept it. And I can't work screwdrivers. I can only work hammers. But my hammer cannot tell me because I am the creator of it. And in the same way, only the creator can identify who you are. And for Jesus to look at the Jewish people and say, you're not true Jews. You're not descendants of Abraham, is to act like a creator. It makes you think. Hold that thought. Because it gets worse. Look at what Jesus says to them. If you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works Abraham did. You seek to kill me, a man who told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You are doing the works your father did. This is so heavy. What Jesus is saying is, your attitude to me determines your identity. Let me say that again. Your attitude to me determines your identity. If you reject me, listen to what Jesus is saying. If you reject me, you're not Abraham's children. Look at what he says. You are doing the works your father did. They said to him, we're not born of sexual immorality. We have one father, even God. Jesus says to them, but if God were your father, you would love me because I came from him. Your self-identity is determined by your attitude to Jesus. Look at what the Bible says. Look at this. No one is a Jew who is merely one outwardly. Nor is circumcision outward and physical. But a Jew is one inwardly, and circumcision is a matter of the heart, by the Spirit, not by the letter. His praise is not from man, but from God. The Bible is so clear. Listen, it's your attitude of your heart to Jesus that determines who you are. Let me say it again. Your identity is determined by your heart's attitude to Jesus. And this is what offends the Jews. The Jews are saying, but no, if you look at my genes, if you look at my DNA, if you come to the change room with me, I'll show you I'm circumcised. I am definitely a child of Abraham. And Jesus says, you're not. Because it's your heart's attitude to me. Now, here's the question. What about us here today? If you find that offensive to Jewish people, and I can see that it is, don't think that because you're a Gentile, it's any less offensive. Jesus would say to you this morning, do you self-identify as a Christian? Are you sure? Are you really a Christian? Because it's your heart's attitude to me that will determine whether you're a Christian or not. Don't self-identify. Don't presume. It's what Jesus says about your heart that determines your identity. Look at what he says. You are doing the works your father did. They said to him, we're not born of sexual immorality. We have one father, even God. This is a classic line from religious people. What do religious people say? Religious people say this: there is one God, he is our father, and we are all his children. That's what religious people say. Have a look at this quote. I don't know now because I don't have any notes anymore. Have a look at this quote. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I've put it up there so you see I'm not making it up, but I'll try and read it from here. This is a religious leader. His name is Archbishop Desmond Tutu. He says exactly what the Pharisees say. There is one God, and therefore we are all in his family. God's dream, he wrote this in a book called The Dream of God. God's dream is that you and I and all of us will realize that we are family. Because you're a human being, so you're in God's family. That's the way he thinks. In God's family, there are no outsiders, no enemies. Black, white, rich, poor, gay, straight, Jew, Arab, Muslim, Christian, Hindu, Buddhist, Hutu, Tutsi, Pakistan, Indian, all belong. Everyone's in God's family. There aren't two houses. There's only one house. We're all in it. Let's hug. God is not upset that Gandhi was not a Christian, because God is not a Christian. All of God's children and their different faiths help us to realize the immensity of God. No faith contains the whole truth about God. And certainly, Christianity does not have a corner on God. That's how religious people speak. But what does Jesus say? By the way, if you talk like that, what will happen to you? If you talk like that, you will get a Nobel Peace Prize. And people will love you. If you talk like that, you will be proclaimed a leader of people. And you'll get the Nobel Peace Prize. Let me show you what Jesus says. Jesus says this. We were not born, look what he says in verse 41. We were not born of sexual immorality. We have one Father, even God. Jesus said to them, if God were your Father, you would love me. Jesus narrows it right down. If you talk like this, you're not going to get a Nobel Peace Prize. I'm waiting for the day that someone gives Jesus a Nobel Peace Prize. It's never going to happen. If you talk like this, you're going to get crucified. Because you're telling the truth. Here's what Jesus is saying. How do I know that I'm in God's family? Is it because I'm a Homo sapien? Is it because I'm a human being? Is it because I'm not born? Does that make me God's family? Look what Jesus says. If God were your Father, you would love me. What makes you a child of God? It's if you love Jesus. That's what makes you a child of God. If you love Jesus. It is entirely about whether you're a Christian or not. Whether you're a Christian or not is all that matters. I can't believe Archbishop Desmond Tutu can get it so wrong. Jesus says, if God were your Father, verse 42, you would love me. Now I want to talk to us Christians, those of us who self-identify as Christians. Please look at those words. If God were your Father, you would believe in me. No, you would love me. Friends, you are not a Christian because you believe in Jesus. How many times must we say this so that no one here presumes like the Jewish people did? It's not about believing in Jesus. Satan believes in Jesus. The devil believes in Jesus more than me, more than you, because he's seen him. It's if you love me. That's what Jesus says. You are a child of God if you love Jesus. Here's the logic. Look at the logic. Look what Jesus says. For I came from God, and I am here. I came not of my own accord, but he sent me. Logically, Jesus says. Now listen, you say God is your father, right? But you never seen him. He's invisible, right? I am here. I'm standing right in front of you. I was with God. I came here, and you don't love me. How can you say you love God when you don't love me? That's the logic. Jesus saying, if you love me, that shows you love the Father whom you've never seen. What's the test of whether you love Jesus? So you're sitting there, and I'm sitting here when I was working, and I'm thinking, okay. So I must love Jesus, and then I'll know that I'm in the Father's house. What's the test? And the answer is how you respond to his word. Love is not a feeling. You're not a real Christian because you feel it. Let's say you woke up this morning, my wife's just gone home because she's feeling really ill. She's not feeling much love for Jesus at all at the moment. Don't tell her I said that. But she's not feeling love for anybody. It's not about her feeling. It's how do you respond to his word. And that's our second thing. Only those who love Jesus have God as their father. But look at this. Secondly, everyone who disobeys Jesus' word has the devil as their father. These are very sobering words. It's how you respond to Jesus' words that determines which house you're in. Look what he says in verse 43. Why do you not understand what I say? It is because you cannot bear to hear my word. Why does someone reject the word of Jesus? Is it too hard? If we did an aptitude test here this morning, are we the cleverest people in the northern suburbs? Is that true? I'm looking around and I'm thinking it's not true. It's not true. Why are people out there not Christians? Is it because they're stupid? Not true. They're not stupid. This is why. Look at what Jesus says. Verse 43. Why do you not understand what I say? It is because you cannot bear to hear my word. It's because you don't like it. You can't bear it. It's not that you don't understand it. Archbishop Desmond Tutu is not an idiot. I think he's a great guy. I think he's done great things. But he's not an idiot. He can't stand what Jesus says. You know, he can't bear what Jesus says. Look at what he says. You don't understand what I say because you cannot bear to. You don't agree with my word. You don't like what I say. In fact, you're a prisoner. Look at verse 44. You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. It's so heavy. Was there ever a person who ever spoke such harsh words as Jesus? But look what he says. You're trapped. You are of your father, the devil. Your will is to do your father's desires. What Jesus is saying is that you're trapped. Your father is the devil, right? And your desires align with his. You want to do what he wants to do. You're so trapped. Remember last week we were talking about this. Look what Jesus says. You are of your father the devil. Your will is to do your father's desires. What the devil wants is actually what you want. Your will and the devil's will are lined up. How so? Well, look what he says. He was a murderer from the beginning. And has nothing to do with the truth, because there's no truth in him. Now, what? Oh, Dwayne, you've got me there. I can see. This is where you're wrong, Dwayne. You say my father is the devil. You say, my father, the devil, is a murderer. You say, I want to do what he wants to do, but I haven't killed anyone. Got you. Oh, look, you know, I've done a few little peccadillos, but I never murdered anyone. So how can you say, my will is to do my father's? Because what does Jesus mean by murderer? The Jews reject Jesus. They tell lies about him. They say that he's not true. And that's what Jesus is talking about. The devil has one aim, to tell lies about Jesus. The devil's one desire is to murder, or let's put it this way, to assassinate Jesus' character, to tell lies about Jesus. And people who reject Jesus love those lies about Jesus. In other words, they join in with Satan against Jesus, and they love his lies about Jesus. Look what he says at the end there, the end of verse 44. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and a father of lies. Let me put it in English. If you believe things about Jesus that are not true, you are following the devil's lies. Let me put it even practically. Every time you sin, you show that there are things about Jesus you don't believe. Okay, you're married. And you start looking at your wife and you're discontent. You don't love your wife. What are you doing at that point? You've stopped believing that Jesus has given you the right wife. At that point, you're believing lies. Jesus, you're not that good to me, because you gave me a 72% wife. And out there, there's an 86% one. See, what you've done is you're believing lies about Jesus. You're saying he's not that good. He's not that good. If you steal something, you're believing lies about Jesus, because you're saying, Jesus, you're not going to look after me. You don't give me what I need. So you know what I'm going to do? I'll take it for myself. You believe lies about Jesus. You're doing your father's will. If you look at pornography, if you look at porn, what are you saying about Jesus? That's what you're saying. I don't believe that you can satisfy me. I don't believe that you can fill my heart. I need something else. I don't believe that you're that delightful. I need to find something else more delightful. Every time you sin, you are doing your father's desires, and you're murdering Jesus, because you're believing things about him that are not true. And that's the work of the devil. Friends, will you get over Harry Potter? It frustrates me when Christians think that Harry Potter's evil, or the devil likes heavy metal, or the devil likes black. We have no idea what color the devil likes. We just don't know. Those things are not evil. What is evil? By the way, they may not be helpful. If you're a parent and you don't want your children to read Harry Potter, good on you. You might decide it's not helpful. That's a different story. I respect that. But you must know, the devil has only got one aim in life: to devalue Jesus, to tell lies about Jesus, to character assassinate Jesus. And when you're in his house, you're trapped. And you don't become a Christian because you don't think Jesus is that great. You believe lies about him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character. He's a liar and the father of lies. Look at verse 45. This is particularly telling. But because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Everyone read that again. Just look at it again. Because I tell the truth, you don't believe me. Isn't that amazing? Why don't people become Christians? Why don't people become Christians? Because it is the truth. If it were not true, people would all become Christians. Or worse, if people wanted to know the truth, they would all become Christians. Jesus is saying, it's the reason you're not believing me is because I tell the truth. You're trapped. Which one of you convicts me of sin, he says in verse 46. If I tell the truth, why do you not believe me? Whoever is of God hears the words of God. The reason why you do not hear them, you are not of God. So let's just recap. There are two houses. And we are trapped. Do you remember what we saw last week? Look up there in verse 34. Jesus answered them, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits a sin is a slave to sin. We are trapped in the one house. Our wills are bound to the devil. We look at Jesus and we just cannot see what's so special about him. We look at Jesus, we just don't value him. We're trapped. We're caught up in this web of lies. We're stuck. Now here comes the good news. But the slave doesn't remain in the house forever. The son remains forever. Verse 36. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. What Jesus comes and does is he snaps the chain. He comes to you and he wakes you up and he says, you've been believing lies about me. You haven't learned the truth about me. And he opens our eyes. We get to see how lovely he is and we realize he is everything that we need. And when that happens, we break free from the house of slavery and we enter the house of the Son, the house of freedom. It's nothing we've done. I don't know where this verse is because I don't have any notes. So I can't remember where I put it up. So what's the next slide? Let's see what comes up. If you know the truth, the truth will set you free. If you know the truth about Jesus, people, it will set you free. Moving on. I'm just commenting on these slides. What's the next one? Yes. What I said to you, it's not Harry Potter. What is satanic? Anything that gets Jesus wrong. Look at Jesus. He began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, scribes, be killed, after 3 days rise again. He said this plainly. Peter took him aside, began to rebuke him, turning to and seeing his disciples. He rebuked Peter and he said, I'm sure that must be a mistype. Because everything's going wrong. So that must be a mistype. Get behind me, Satan. Is that what it says? That's what it says. If Peter can reject the cross and reject Jesus Christ, that is satanic. And I don't think Peter was into Metallica. It wasn't that. Is if you reject Jesus, that is satanic. If you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of men, that is satanic. What's the next slide? Keep going. I want you to come to this one. So how do we go from the house of slavery into the house of freedom? Look what we're told in the Bible. Giving thanks to the Father who has qualified you to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. He has delivered us from the domain of darkness, transferred us into the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption and the forgiveness of sins. The great glory of Jesus Christ, and look at the next slide, is that he is, go to the next slide there, he is the Son over God's house. Jesus has the authority to pick you up out of Satan's house and put you in the house of his Father, in whom we have redemption and the forgiveness of sins. I'm thinking again of Donald Trump. Now, who would you like? America's at war. There are two houses. There's the house of the Republicans and the house of the Democrats. Which house do you want to be in? Who do you want to rule over you? Crooked Hillary or insane Donald? Out of 256 million, is that the best two you could come up with? But anyway, so you got these two houses, and you're going to be under one of the houses. Imagine you get to the point where you're tired. If I watch Fox News, Donald is like Gabriel the Archangel. If I watch CNN, Hillary is like Mother Mary. So I'm tired of all the lies and spin. How do I know which one is true? How do you? Well, imagine Donald Trump has a son called Donald Trump Jr. and you decide, I'd love to know the truth. And this son comes to you and visits you and spends time with you and says, no, that's not the way my dad is. I've come from my dad. I grew up with my dad. I've lived with my dad for like forever. I know that's not, I was there. And he gives you inside information about his dad. But more than that, imagine if he says, tell you what, I'll get you to meet him. If you welcome me in, you welcome him in. I'll get you into my dad. You can spend time with him. You can see him for yourself. Then you can decide whether you want the Trump to rule over you. Look, this is just an illustration, because it's going to get worse. Because imagine now you're in big trouble with the Trump. I've heard he forgets nothing. Imagine you've trashed a hotel, you and your rock band, or whatever, and you owe him big money. Imagine if his son came to you and says, tell you what, I'll sort you out with my dad. I'll pay all your debts. And you might, and tell you what, I'll better still, I'll get my dad to adopt you. According to Forbes magazine, that puts you in line of $15 billion. Would you like to be adopted by Donald Trump? How about a hotline? Donald, our swimming pool pump's broken. Yeah, just a couple of thousand, Aussie dollars. Well, that's a joke. Yeah. Imagine a hotline to Donald Trump. He adopts you. But it's a terrible illustration. Because who wants the surname Trump? But if Jesus, as the son over the father's house, should come to you and say, I can get you in. I can make God your father with a hotline. I'll pay all your debts. You can inherit not 15 billion, but the earth. And best of all, you don't need to change your surname to Trump. But you still get the family name. Christian. You get to be a Christian. That's what Jesus offers this morning. You can get to be in your Father's house. I want to say last three things. What's so great about having God as your Father? Some of you are sitting there and you're thinking, Father, I don't want to think that word. I had a terrible father. I hate him. I hate his guts. And, you know, let me tell you, you need a father. Not like your earthly father, because he's very imperfect. You need a father. Our society says mother, father, you can just swap them around. They're interchangeable. They just do the same stuff. What happens if you mix mum and dad? What do you get? Mad. Or no, worse, dumb. You know, don't mix mum and dad. They're not interchangeable. You need a father for three reasons. Your father, his role is to create you. God, your Father, is creating you. He's making something of you. He's molding your character. He's shaping you. You need a father. Secondly, it's your Father who provides for you. Your Father looks after you. He gives you what you need. You've got a hotline to him. He gives you everything you need because he owns everything. And finally, you need a father. Because where will you end up one day? Your father's going to come and fetch. He's going to take you home to be with him forever. Jesus says, if you accept me, your father is God. The greatest privilege a Christian has is to say this, Abba, Father. The greatest privilege a Christian has is to look at God and say, Dad, Father, you're either in the house of the devil or you're in the house of Jesus. I'll give you a few minutes to chew over that, and then I don't know if there's time for questions. Maybe we'll take questions and then we'll have communion.